Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And need more coffee roasters. A woman-owned coffee shop dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers. Offering teas and signature drinks like the Hilltopper. Located on Pete Ellis Drive. Needmoreroasters.com. From WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, I'm Kate Young, and this is Earth Eats.
You don't see these wonderful things in nature if you're not outside in it. And to me, maple syrup is just one more opportunity to be outside, immersed in nature.
This week on our show, we join Shane Gibson of Sycamore Land Trust while we listen in on all the learning and fun of Maple Syrup Day at a local elementary school. Then we've got a couple of recipes from the archives to put that maple syrup to good use. We'll start with a story from Harvest Public Media about a meat and dairy surplus in the U.S. and where the excess food ends up. That's all just ahead in the next half hour here on Earth Eats. It's projected this year that the average American meat eater will consume 220 pounds of meat and more than 200 pounds of milk and cheese. Despite that near-record demand, farmers are producing it faster than it sells. Harvest Public Media's Jonathan All reports that glut, caused in part by trade issues, is creating problems on what to do with all that perishable food.
Companies looking to put something in cold storage, like food, might be out of luck these days. Corey Rosenbusch is the president of the Global Cold Chain Alliance, a trade group representing the industry. He says right now, the facilities he represents are at 86% capacity.
In our space, anywhere from 82 to 90 is considered full.
Rosenbusch says there's a large supply in the U.S. of chicken, beef, pork, cheese, and milk, and it all has to go somewhere.
All of these, you know, really have created a perfect storm of significantly high capacities and really very little space available out there.
There are lots of reasons why there's so much extra meat and dairy out there. Increased efficiency is pushing production higher, on average 2% a year over the past decade. During that same time, demand dropped off during the recession and is just now getting back to 2007 levels. Tariffs are also hurting exports. So the federal government has stepped in to try to distribute the excess.
Hey, have the Jeep go up to the next one. And you can pull up man for this first cone right here.
About 24 food bank volunteers are working to set up a makeshift drive-through for a special food distribution day in a vacant parking lot in St. Louis. There are 6 pallets, each stacked more than 6 feet high with half-gallon jugs of whole milk, waiting to be put in the trunks of the cars that drive through. Lenora Gooden is in charge of operations for the St. Louis Area Food Bank and says this is an unscheduled distribution.
So it's a blessing to us because it's also milk and the stuff that can go bad quickly that we don't have to purchase because we don't get it donated so much in these quantities. So we'll take whatever they send us. We just get a little more creative in how we distribute it.
This extra food comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. As part of the effort to help farmers hurt by tariffs, the USDA is buying 250 million pounds of meat and 65 million pounds of cheese and milk to distribute to food banks across the country. In St. Louis today, it's just dairy. The meat should arrive next month. With cold storage at capacity and food banks inundated, something's got to give. Scott Brown is an agricultural economist with the University of Missouri. He says production has been outpacing demand for long enough that he sees a breaking point.
It is sending the signal to the supply side of these industries to at least slow the growth that we've seen for the last few years. So as I look ahead in 2019 and in 2020 in particular, it seems like we're going to find a little better balance.
But meat and dairy producers don't see it that way. Economist Bill Roenick works for a number of meat trade groups and says despite the surplus and lower prices, more efficient meat production has many farmers in the black.
Chicken is making money. certain parts of beef are making money, certain parts of the pork industry are making money. So in that sense, if you're making money, the signals are you should continue to do what you're doing or produce a bit more.
There has been increased demand for some of the food piling up. China's pigs were hit with an outbreak of African swine fever, so China bought 23,000 tons of U.S. pork despite the tariff. That's meat that would have otherwise gone into cold storage or to overloaded food banks. Jonathan All, Harvest Public Media.
Our partners at Harvest Public Media report on food and agriculture from the heartland. For more on this reporter collective, go to harvestpublicmedia.org. There comes a time in March when it seems like winter is never going to end. At Unionville Elementary School, just outside of Bloomington, Indiana, the students had a chance to learn an old tradition for those last cold days of winter. Associate producer Alex Chambers went to visit and sent back this sound portrait.
All right, your turn. Kind of
push from the top. Sure.
Push it from the top and now...
I think we sent home 125 spiles.
Oh, yeah.
A spile is like a hollow tube where you will, that will let the sap flow out of the tree and into your bucket.
I'm Shane Gibson, Environmental Education Director with Sycamore Land Trust. Sycamore Land Trust is a nonprofit, and our mission is to conserve land and Southern Indiana and to connect people to nature. As the education director, I get the good fortune to do a lot of the connecting people to nature. These wooden spiles are made from elderberry that I just snipped some elderberry from my house. Elderberry and sumac have a soft pith in the middle. And so you can take a heat up like a hot wire.
It should be hot enough. I use my gloves and we're just gonna burn out the pith.
Burn out the pith.
Get that hot wire, it just burns out the center, pushes right through that really soft pith. And that didn't go all the way through, but we have one that's completed, and so then you have your spile, or like a straw, you could use it for a straw, made very quickly from elderberry.
And that's your spile that would go in the tree and would then direct the sap into your collection container. They've probably brought in 60, 70 gallons of sap. We'll never get through that today. I brought in my portable evaporator to then demonstrate how you can cook it at home in your backyard. I just have a 55-gallon drum, and I went to a hardware store and purchased an adapter kit that you can get for those to make them into a wood-burning stove. I cut a rectangle out of the top that would fit a pan that is used in like a buffet style pan I got from a restaurant supply store. So that pan fits right in there. And so now you have your one pan evaporator. What we have going on is we have our main pan evaporating. We have another pot on the back of the cooker that's heating up the sap so that when we go from we take that warm sap on the pot and put it into our boiling pan so we don't lose our boil. The key thing for making maple syrup is keep that fire hot in a rolling boil. The faster you can get that water evaporated off, the quicker you're going to get to syrup. And I've had too many experiences of getting distracted and you let your fire go away, and then you're there all day long. So then we also have a Coleman stove showing the finishing process. So we have some sap that we're trying to finish to syrup. So we have our different ways to show students that they can use just a spatula to dip in and just do a visual if it's syrup, but if it comes off like a sheet of paper. We have a candy thermometer, and we also have a hydrometer that measures the sugar content. So there's different ways that you can finish it. We're also showing them how to bottle the syrup and why we turn the bottles on their side when it's hot. And we have then a tasting session area so they can taste the sap and taste some finished syrup.
It's not like the normal syrup you would taste after it's been like through the fire. I don't know how to explain it. It's like...
So it kind of tastes like the... Ice after sucking on a popsicle during the summer.
It's like a mixture of like 3/4 of sugar and like a half a cup of water.
I could just taste like how the ice does after sucking on it for a while.
I did really like the sap.
It tastes like water with juice.
I notice with the syrup, it kind of tastes like it's almost like it was smoked at one point. Which kind of makes sense, because, I mean, you require a hot stove to cook it. Well, the sap...
I did really like the sap.
It kind of tastes like it's kind of... bitter.
I like the sap. And the maple syrup was also really good as well.
So Maple Syrup Day came about because last year I worked at a school in Evansville Montessori, and they organized what they called the Sugar Bush Social. And we really modeled today off of that first experience there, and also modeled it a lot off of my experiences of doing maple syrup camp at Bradford Woods and the maple syrup programs at Southeast Way Park in Indianapolis. And so in having that experience in Evansville, I came to Mrs. Albright and I said, I think this could work well for your school. What do you think? And so she was willing to work together and give this a try. And we brought in Bradford Woods staff to have extra teachers doing the history stations of Native American history. And
so we have three stations here.
Pioneer history.
The first stations, you're able to practice drilling a tree using a hand driller. And then the next stations, you're going to practice how to hammer a spile.
Okay. We're talking about how back when the Native Americans used tools, how they had to use rocks and just things that they found in natural resources around them, whereas the pioneers have made tools such as hand drills and different things like that, and spiles as well, to help collect the sap and copper buckets and things. My name is Katie Hamaker, and I am from Bradford Woods.
I'm Neil Quintanar. I'm from Bradford Woods.
And the third station there with Beth, you're going to see, this is what they call a yoke, where the pioneers introduce. A yoke is where we put it on our shoulders, and then two buckets on each side that will help us carry the sap that we just collected. Okay, there you go. And like that. Okay, is that cool? Are you excited to try on these machines?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to divide you into three groups.
The event here today is just teaching the kids about Native Americans and how they discovered maple syrup, and then the process of the pioneers coming over and bringing their tools. All right, your turn.
Push from the top. Sure.
I think he's doing all this.
Push it from the top and now.
Right now they are actually, there's a group that's hand drilling a tree.
It's getting hard.
There you go.
Okay, so they are turning the knobs, and we're teaching them how to drill the maple tree. And then the next group, how to put on the spile. It's made up of metal, but sometimes it can be just plastic, and then sometimes it can also be wood. Okay? So they're going to hammer it into a tree. And then the third group there, they're trying on the yoke. So the yoke is where it's like... something that you put in your shoulders, and then that will help you bring the buckets.
Can you do it again?
Yes, yes. Yeah, if there's some extra. See, there's no sawdust.
Miss Albright sent home a questionnaire. Do you have maple trees? Would you like to help collect sap for our maple syrup day? Students brought back the forms, and Unionville Elementary and Sycamore Land Trust bought spiles and taps to send home. I think we sent home 125 spiles. So families really got involved. I know some kids are cooking at home. They've probably brought in 60, 70 gallons of sap. We'll never get through that today. And in each class, I came in and did an in-class session with each class to kind of give them some knowledge and confidence to say, hey, I could do this at home. Let's give it a try. What do I have to lose? If Shane can do it, I could probably pull this off too.
So I need, Ms. Underwood, if you could select two volunteers for us.
How about Hank and Abby?
All right, so we need, you're going to come inside the cones. One of you go over here with Bray. We need help. One of the jobs when you are making maple syrup is splitting wood. I like to use small pieces because they burn hotter and faster, and you can keep that fire really hot. So when you use these big hammers, you don't have to swing them real hard. The weight will help do the work for you. So just keep your fingers back from the edge, maybe up around the tape. And I'm going to hold the axe, and you move your hand back a tiny bit.
Yep. Ready?
There we go. And then you get to that point, you can just pull it apart. Nice. All right. Thanks for your help. That helps us out a lot.
The thing I love about maple syrup, and I've loved that some of these kids have gone out and done it, is that this is a time of year when many people spend their days indoors. And this is a great time of year. Maple syrup's a great activity to get you outside in a time of year that you may not usually be outside. And this time of year is a great time to hear the sandhill cranes flying over. I was tapping trees a couple years ago, and two bald eagles came flying over. One was upside down. They were kind of going back and forth, and the one on the bottom actually hit a limb in the woods that we were tapping in, fell to the forest floor, kind of got its wits about it, and then took off again. All happened in about 10 seconds. But I use that as an example of, you don't see these wonderful things in nature if you're not outside in it. And to me, maple syrup is just one more opportunity to be outside, immersed in nature. It's really been a good partnership over the last two school years working out here. They really embrace being outside.
It takes a long time, and usually the first time you harvest the sap, you get the most. It was one day, and then we got like half a gallon.
They probably brought in 60, 70 gallons of sap.
Half a gallon, because we had half gallon jugs on there.
And not everything we do is outside, but just nature-based learning. And it's not all science. You know, we're doing cultural history here today. We're doing healthy eating. A lot of what we do in wild edibles type things, that's about healthy lifestyles. And being outside carrying 5-gallon buckets of sap, that's exercise. It's a lot of hard work.
It like tastes like honey with just more sugar.
And it's really fulfilling at the end of the day to have a stash of maple syrup.
That was Shane Gibson from Sycamore Land Trust. We also heard from outdoor educators Katie Hammaker and Neil Kinnitar from Bradford Woods, and Unionville Elementary students Reese, Jason, Zachary, Arlo, Landon, and Julian. The best weather conditions for harvesting maple sap is when the overnight lows are in the 20s and the highs are in the 40s. So it's probably too late to tap your trees this year, but you can keep it in mind for next winter if you've got maple trees in your yard. It takes about 10 gallons of sap to make a quart of syrup, depending on the sugar content of your particular maple sap. Maple Syrup Day is a part of Unionville Elementary School's EARTH program. EARTH stands for Environment, Art, Resources, Technology, and Health. You can learn more about the program and see photos from the event at eartheats.org. And coming up in just a moment, recipes using maple syrup. We've got a savory and a sweet, so stay tuned. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent providing customized financial services for individuals, businesses, and disabled adults, including tax planning, bill paying, and estate services. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. And Charles Schwab and Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Once you turn that maple sap into syrup, what can you do with it beyond pancakes and waffles? Which, by the way, is plenty, don't get me wrong. But for some ideas on ways to cook with maple syrup, we reached way back into the Earth Eats archive for two recipes from Farm Bloomington Restaurant. Earth Eats founder and former host Annie Corrigan brings us these maple-infused treats.
Turnips, you know, they're kind of a forgotten vegetable, an old-timey vegetable, but they are delicious. And their whole dish is in France called navarins, which are all about the navet, which the French turnip in French is navet. And so a navarin is a stew made with turnips. It usually has lamb in it, so that's a wonderful dish. We're going to do something more kind of Hoosier and down home using Tim Burton's maple syrup. So what you need to do is pick out a nice turnip. They should be shiny. See how that it's kind of shiny, and if you feel the texture of it, very, very smooth. If it's wrinkly and soft, then it's not going to be good. It's going to become kind of bitter from being in storage too long. If you can get them with the greens, the turnip greens are edible as well. Cook them just like anything else. If you love pork, throw some bacon in there, stew them down, delicious. If you don't, you could use some toasted walnuts with them, a little bit of balsamic vinegar, great way to cook the turnip greens. Again, a little bit of sweetness always helps with the greens too, because they can be a little bit bitter. So just a little bit of honey, agave, even some brown sugar would be fine, just a pinch. You don't want to be sickly sweet, just to kind of cover up that touch of bitterness. So basically with the turnip bulb, what we're going to do is dice it up. I would say about half inch pieces, and then steam it off, and you'll come up with a turnip much like this. Now, this is a little hot, but if you want to taste it, it should still be a little bit crunchy.
You just throw this in your mouth, it's so hot. Oh my God. Okay, crunchy. Okay. Well,
crunchy. All right, so we have these ready. They're cooked, they're hot, they're kind of steaming. Now we're going to put together the sauce for them. So just a touch of oil. Minced onions, teaspoon, garlic. Just going to let those become a little tender. We don't want them to be super soft. And I'm going to throw a couple dried chili peppers. We're going to leave them whole, and that way we can take them out. So if you're wanting to get a chili flavor, but you don't want to have it too hot, so that's always a good trick. I just added about 2 tablespoons of maple syrup. And now I'm going to add some chopped kumquats. I've got 4 kumquats. They look like little tiny oranges, and you can eat the whole thing. You can eat the skin and all. You can squeeze out the seeds, but I even eat the seeds. And they've got a really nice perfumey orange flavor. Okay, we're going to dump our turnips in, and that's about 1 large turnip. This would be enough for a side vegetable for probably 4 people. And finally, just to make it a little bit better, we got my butter, and the butter is going to enrobe the turnips, give them a nice shine.
Maybe that's the thing, I'm not cooking my turnips with a tablespoon of butter.
Well, the butter, I mean, when you're eating all these great local vegetables, a little butter is going to make them even more special and something to look forward to. Okay, I got the sweetness, touch of spice, I get that little bit of orange flavor. I'm going to throw in some greens just to make them look pretty. This is some chopped parsley and scallions. I'm going to put these out on the plate. You can give them a try.
Yep, that's a great way to prepare turnips. This dish has Southern Indiana written all over it. The recipe
at eartheats.org. A new chef to introduce for another maple-infused dish. This is Emily Bolin, the pastry chef at Farm Bloomington.
Okay, so what are you making for me today?
This is our maple-spiced creme brulee.
What I'm looking at, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 egg yolks. I see no white in sight.
No, it is all egg yolks, just for stabilize it. And I have a half a cup of sugar, just white plain sugar, and you whisk that in as well. And then we have a quart of steamed cream on the stove. You just want to slowly add your heavy cream so that you don't cook and coagulate your egg yolks. So then we don't have scrambled eggs. Now I'm going to add a tablespoon of vanilla just to give it some nice flavor. It'll help pull the maple out. And then we have a teaspoon of Chef D's sweet seasoning, clove, allspice, cinnamon, nutmeg.
Whisking, ever whisking, ever whisking.
Yes. You want everything mixed together so that every bite tastes the same.
Chef's philosophy when he's cooking savory stuff is he wants every bite to be a little bit different. Not so with pastry.
No. More so in baked custards. You want it all to taste the same and flowy. Next, I'm going to add a third cup of the maple syrup.
And I see, what do I see? Little lemon chunks in there? Lemon zest?
Yes. Lemon especially will help bring the cinnamon and the sweetness out. And it just makes everything taste better when you add lemon.
I agree with you. I agree.
And now our mixture is done. It's really easy just to make that up, and it looks really runny. You'll think, how on earth will this bake together? But it does, I promise.
And you have a lighter, just a regular old light. Whoa, and then Chef comes with a torch.
You just want to sprinkle your sugar over your brulee. You just want it to kind of fill in all your little nooks and crannies on the brulee and kind of sink down in. It makes a nice little crust.
Light our torch.
You're just trying to lightly toast your sugar, just a nice little candy color.
How's it looking?
It's looking really good.
And tasting as good as it looks, but don't take our word for it. Pictures on the website, the recipes there as well. Give it a shot for your next big family dinner, eartheats.org. These days, you won't find Emily Bolin baking at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, but you can still find that recipe and many more. It's a deep, deep archive at eartheats.org. That's it for our show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone on the Earth Eats crew, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Renee Reed, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Emily Bolin, Shane Gibson, Katie Hammaker, Neil Kenitar, and everyone at Unionville Elementary School. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee shop committed to sustainable practices and organic, ethically sourced coffee from small-scale farmers, featuring handmade quiche, scones, and baked goods. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at griffeycreek.studio.